Environment and Land Use. Thanks, everybody, for coming today on these bills.
Okay.
Just wanted to go over the order of these bills. I've had a number of requests to start with Senate Bill 730 so that folks can then go to other meetings, and I certainly want to facilitate that. So we'll start with 730, and other than that, I don't really care. I'm going to wait and see who else is on the witness list, but I'm happy to accommodate schedules as necessary. So let's open a public hearing on Senate Bill 730, and I'd like to begin with Senator Bruce Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator State Senator Bruce Starr from Senate District 15, representing Western Washington County. I'm pleased to be here. I will be exceedingly brief, because I know you do have a number of individuals here to testify on this bill, and I want to provide them the opportunity to do that. But I just do want to say that Senate Bill 730 really comes before the legislature because of a land use Board of Appeals decision, a LUBA decision, that really changed the way that we have, the local governments in the metro area, have understood the relationship between metro and local governments. And that LUBA decision really, in a lot of our minds, went a lot farther in allowing metro to determine local zoning, local land use regulations of the local communities. And I see that Senate Bill 730 is an opportunity for us to once again establish, I think, what everybody has assumed for years and years is the relationship between metro and our local cities and county. I would ask that you listen closely to the testimony, both from local governments and from some of the business interests that are here to testify. And Mr. Chair, I understand that, or at least I hope that you've gotten a letter from Deanna Palm, who's the Executive Director of the Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce, who's not able to testify. If you don't have
what was the name?
Deanna Palm.
Okay, I'll check the file.
I have a copy of that, but she's not here to testify today. She emailed me some testimony, and if it didn't get to you, I can provide that to the committee as well. That's all really that I will say on that bill, other than to say that it's important, and I think to reestablish what all of us expected or believed, the relationship between local governments in the metro area and the metro council or metro ought to be. So
okay.
With that, I appreciate the opportunity just to chime in my 2 cents worth, my support of Senate Bill 730. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? All right. Thank you. I'd like to start with the proponents of the bill and then go get the other perspective and probably go back and forth just to keep it interesting. So let's start with Tom Hughes and Tim. Is it Sircombe?
Chair Ringo, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Sircombe. I'm with the firm of Preston, Gates & Ellis. My work address is 222 Southwest Columbia Street, Portland, 97201. And I appear here in support of passage of Senate Bill 730. As indicated in my written testimony, I have three experiences or backgrounds that are relevant to the merits of this proposed measure. First, I was the legal counsel for the Metro Charter Committee and spent much of 1992 working on the draft of the charter, and I was one of the principal drafters of it. And I believe that Senate Bill 730 better implements the Metro Charter than the way that the current statutes are being interpreted. Second, I've been a practicing land use lawyer for close to 30 years, and I am a strong supporter of Oregon's land use planning system. I believe that Senate Bill 730 better implements and is better planning law than the way that the current statutes are being implemented. And finally, I've lectured and taught about municipal home rule, which is one of the issues that you'll hear about in connection with this legislation for a long time. Oops, I beg your pardon. I got the return.
I'll get it.
And And it appeared in four Oregon Supreme Court cases dealing with city home rule, one court of appeals case over a period of 27 years. And I think this legislation better preserves city home rule authority and does not intrude into Metro's own charter home rule authority in a way that's not meritorious. The issue in this bill is whether or not Metro can adopt uniform zoning laws for all 25 cities and all three counties within its jurisdiction, and compel each city and county to adopt the same zoning law, without regard to the policies and guidelines that are contained in the local comprehensive plan for that city or county. The proposed measure, we believe, preserves Metro's ability to influence the content of local comprehensive plans and to address regional issues and Metro policies in local comprehensive plans, but it prevents Metro from telling cities and counties how to carry out those comprehensive plans and how and the precise choice to make in terms of the content of local zoning laws. Those decisions, we believe, should be made by local city councils, county boards of commissioners, with the influence of citizens and affected entities participating in the process. So we think that Senate Bill 730 is necessary for four reasons. First, it carries out the intent of Metro's organic law, its charter. There was a big debate within the Charter Committee when the Metro's charter was being put together about, well, so what kind of entity do we want to make this Metro? Do we want to allow it to comprehensive plan, to adopt a map for the entire region and say this is where all the commercial area goes, this is where the industrial area is, to zone, if you will, on a regional basis? Do we want to allow it the authority to cram down, to tell every jurisdiction what its zoning law should say? There was a debate, but the majority of the Charter Committee, in fact, the strong majority of the Charter Committee, felt that that wasn't the way for Metro to go, that if it did that, it would destroy the vitality of local planning and the legitimacy of local planning by taking it away from citizens who are being affected by those laws and giving those decisions to the Metro Council. So the Charter explicitly limits Metro in its authority to compel mandatory local zoning laws, and it says that it in fact has to set out voluntary standards that localities can adopt as part of their zoning codes, and it prevents uniform and mandatory zoning laws, and that's the same thing that this bill does. Secondly, I think that it's a good planning law. There are, I think, two core principles in the way that Oregon's land use planning system has been developed. One is that those who are affected by the laws, those who are regulated by the law, should have a direct say in their enactment. That's why the citizen involvement is the primary statewide planning goal. It is goal one. And so the ability of citizens, the ability of the citizens of Hillsborough to have a say in what the content of their zoning laws are, is critical to the legitimacy of those laws, to whether or not they're going to be followed and respected, and to whether or not they're good laws. Secondly, the second principle that's core to our planning system is that cities and counties are required to adopt a comprehensive plan. And the purpose of that comprehensive plan is to meld federal policies, state policies, regional policy, metro policies, citizen involvement, all sorts of input into a coordinated standard that's going to govern the content and implementing ordinances and possibly land use decisions that are governed by that plan. That is the way that we've been planning for 30 years. And I think that this bill prevents Metro from doing what I call a plan bypass. That is to say, without regard to your plan, Hillsborough, we want you to adopt this specific industrial zoning district. Here's what you can allow. Here's what you can't allow in your industrial zoning districts. Here's where you have to put your high-density residential development. Here's what you can do and not do along streams, that sort of thing. And you have to put that in your zoning code. Without regard to what your comprehensive plan says, without regard to what other relevant state policies or federal policies or local citizen input, this is what you have to do, and the comprehensive plan be damned. You know, that's, again, I think, inconsistent with the way that we've been planning in this state for 30 years. And what this bill does, I believe, is that it preserves the ability of Metro to tell us things that we have to address in our comprehensive plan, policies that we have to carry out, and principles that we have to adhere to. And it leaves some choice to localities in terms of how that plan in turn is carried out in terms of local legislation. It preserves the authority of cities to adopt zoning laws. It preserves their choices, their ability of their councils to make detail in the content of legislation zoning laws, which is, again...
If you could just wrap up in a minute, that'd be great.
I shall. Thank you. So the third reason why it's needed is that it preserves, again, the city's rights to legislate. And finally, the bill is needed because we've been unable to solve this issue at a local government level. Last summer, before the legislation that was the subject of the litigation was adopted, three city attorneys, one county council, filed a brief with the Metro Council saying, this is a tough problem here, and we think you're going too far. We'd like to talk about this. And there was no dialogue. And this was the same kind of fight we had 4 or 5 years ago in a similar context. So we're not trying to undercut what Metro needs to do in order to do its job. We think it needs to be more like LCDC in how it does its job in terms of adopting policies that influence our plans, but we don't think it should be able to dictate to Hillsborough how it implements its comprehensive plan, and that this bill restores that relationship, makes it more clear, and is consistent with the way Metro was set up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Hughes?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Hughes, and I'm mayor of the city of Hillsborough. And we are one of the prime movers in terms of asking this legislation to come forward, and appreciate the opportunity to come before you today and talk a little bit about it. Tim has done what good city attorneys do and sort of outlined the legal brief of why we think this bill is important. Let me talk about it a little bit in the political context and just in terms of the relationship, how we do business in Hillsborough and how that business is being interrupted by land use board of appeals decision that really changes the dynamics between ourselves and our regional partner. I included in my testimony a copy of the ballot title from back in 1992 when the Metro Charter was first adopted, ballot measure 26-3, and you'll notice that in one of what we all think is one of the best ballot titles ever written, that starts out with the idea that should the people adopt a charter to limit Metro's power. I would compare that vision of what Metro government should be about that was presented to the people back in 1992 that caused them to say, yes, we do want a charter for Metro to do that, with the language that came out of the Luba decision, which basically says that Metro has plenary authority over all land use actions taken by cities and counties within the region, which I consider to be a direct violation of our own charter authority and our own ability to do business. There was some dialogue at Luba where they were asked, is there any limit on your authority to deal with that issue? And they said, we think the only thing the charters limit us from doing is telling them what form of government they can have. We think that that's a far cry from the vision that the people had back in 1992 of what Metro should do, and I describe that basically as mission creep. It hasn't happened as a result of any particular evil intention or bad behavior on the part of Metro officials. It simply has happened as part of a day-to-day quest for an additional mission, for looking for other ways of doing things of what they believe to be best for the community, but in the process they have overreached in some occasions, and they have, and particularly in the case of this Luba case, they have the power now to overreach even further. You may hear from folks, well, but this is all limited because Metro can only do that in cases of metropolitan concern. I would invite you to take a look. If you want a picture of what Metro's view of metropolitan concern is, I would invite you to look at their natural resource inventory map, their Goal 5 map, where basically they took Landsat pictures of the entire region, identified every nook, cranny, drainage ditch, bramble patch in the entire region, and said, first of all, it's a natural habitat resource, and second of all, it's all regionally significant. So if everything, including the trees in my backyard, are regionally significant, then how is of metropolitan significance a self-imposed limitation that's going to regulate where Metro can go with this? And again, I don't believe it's because people at Metro have bad intentions. So I have folks on the Metro Council that have supported me politically, folks I have supported politically. It simply is the nature, I believe, of the way a regional government operates. And what they need are clear boundaries. And the purpose of 730 is to do that. It is to set the boundaries. And I believe it's to set the boundaries where they should be set. Metro gets to set general regional policy. Metro gets to point to directions. They get to lead initiatives to provide for the livability of the community. And then the local communities get to write the specific zoning code and the specific comp plan language that implements those codes. Nothing in 730 takes a single power away from Metro that they currently have in the statute and in their charter. They still have all of the enforcement powers that they have under the current language in the law. It simply says you can't tell a specific language as to what you should do. You can't say to a jurisdiction, 3,000 square foot restaurants are okay, 4,000 square foot restaurants are bad. You can say to the jurisdiction, save your industrial land and preserve it from commercial intrusion. And then it's up to the local jurisdiction to determine. And I think there's a couple of reasons why that is the proper way to draw the line. And one of them is very similar to what Tim said. We're the folks that when we write our code, have the public hearings, folks come to our public hearings because we're located in the local city hall. They know how to get to us. They know how to call me on the telephone. They know how to reach my city councilors. We have meetings at night so that folks who are working people can actually come and testify. They testify to what the impact of that zoning code is going to be on them and their neighborhood. And that's something that, if you escalate that up to the higher level and allow zoning code language to be written at the regional level, they don't have that access, not because they don't have public hearings, but they don't have access because the public hearings are not as accessible as the ones that we have at the local level. So the citizens do not inform the zone changes and the zoning law changes to the degree that they do at the local level. That's why zoning code should be written at the local level and not at the regional level. And secondly, we're the folks who deal directly with the businesses that either want to locate in the region, want to expand in the region, or want to grow in our home communities. Hillsborough has had probably more success than any jurisdiction in the state, perhaps, in terms of both recruiting, retaining, and growing businesses in our community. We have done that because our zoning code is flexible and allows us to meet the needs of the industrial users, the commercial users, and address their concerns in a collaborative way so that they can make quick decisions, quick moves, and develop the agility that they need in order to survive in the modern industrial world. The knowledge-based industries that we want to recruit, that are in Hillsborough, that we want to retain, we want to recruit to Hillsborough, require decisions that can be made very quickly. The further you remove the decision-making from the planning counter, the harder it is to make those decisions in a way that is quick and reasonable. If we have to say to a potential client, we can have you up and operational within a year if you give us those plans, but first you have to go down to Metro and make sure it's going to be okay with their plans, then that's a company that's going to walk out our door and go to the next region that has land available for them to go to. We lose those jobs. We lose that opportunity. So I think from the standpoint of economic development, it is vital to keep the ability to do local zoning at the local level and allow us the flexibility that a top-down, one-size-fits-all, cookie-cutter type of imposition of zoning code language from the regional government does not allow. And so I'm here basically today to support 730, to answer any questions you might have, and basically to urge you to help us sort of draw a boundary to avoid this mission creep.
Thank you very much, Mayor Hughes. Questions from the committee? I have a question. Can you give me maybe the latest context or two of this dispute? I mean, everything we've talked about has kind of been theoretical. Give me the precise argument that you had where you thought Metro wasn't giving you the flexibility you needed.
And Tim can probably phrase it in more legal terms. And from our perspective, we had a discussion with Metro collectively, all of the jurisdictions in the region, about how to best preserve, how to expand the urban growth boundary for industrial land, and how, as a component of that, to preserve industrial land within the urban growth boundary. The proposal that Metro had was that we preserve industrial land within the jurisdiction by imposing a series of regulations on that industrial land, creating some areas that are called regionally significant industrial areas that would be pretty heavily regulated, and then some regulations that would apply to the rest of the industrial land. We actually wound up with none of the land in Hillsborough in regionally significant industrial areas, with the exception of the 200 acres at Chute and Evergreen that was brought in the last urban growth boundary expansion. But the regulations that were left on the industrial lands, for example, said you can have a restaurant that's ancillary to the industrial properties, but it can't be more than 3,000 square feet.
And that's a regulation that you would have preferred not to have.
I'd have preferred to have that, not have that there. Well, I mean, it's.
And do you think that regulation harmed your ability to bring in industry?
I think that level of regulation harms our ability to bring in industry. Some of the other regulations, I'm trying to think just off the top of my head, one of them was a regulation on medical office buildings. And there is a general regulation. There are some general regulations on office use in general. And I think not only, you know, part of the concern that we had was not only did we think that harmed our ability to bring in industry, but companies operating in Hillsborough told us that would harm our ability to help them expand and to bring other companies in. And I think what we're saying essentially is, you know, the way the land use process works, we take our stuff to the state, it gets approved, it gets acknowledged. We have then a fairly long period of time to give assurances to companies that want to locate there. Yeah, these are the rules, and these are going to stay the rules because we get to set the rules. The minute we stop being able to set the rules, we can no longer give those assurances. And the difficulty that we have is that we're the only region in the country where that's true. Literally everybody else has to deal with state and local government. We have to deal with state, local, and regional government, and it's just that extra layer that causes some people to skedaddle.
Okay, thank you. Ready? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Let's hear from the Metro councillors. Councillor Bragdon and Councillor Newman, did you want to?
No.
No? Okay. David, anybody you want to come up with you?
By myself.
Okay.
I'll introduce them, though.
Okay.
I do want to introduce Councillor Susan McLean, who represents the western part of the region, and Councillor Brian Newman, who represents the southeastern part of the region, who are here. And I'll be speaking on their behalf as well as the behalf of the other councillors.
Okay.
I'm elected to represent the region as a whole. It's about 1.3 million people throughout the region. Each of the other six councillors is elected by districts. They have about 220,000 constituents each. We're all elected through contested elections in our region, open to a wide variety of candidates. We have some candidates who may be pro-environmental. We may have some candidates who are pro-business. We may have some candidates who have a relaxed view toward the urban growth boundary. We have candidates who might take a more expansive view of it.
Excuse me, we just had a reminder. If you could state your name on the record,
sure,
the microphone, that'd be great.
Sure. My name is David Bragdon. It's
okay.
B-R-A-G-D-O-N.
Thank you.
President of the Metro Council.
Thank you.
Thanks. But one thing that is certain is that all of us were put there by the voters, and the same voters who elect our mayors and city councilors, who are partners in this work, the same voters who elect state senators and state representatives as well. And our view is that we all need to be serving that public together. Voters in our region also did another thing, which was to adopt a charter for our agency, something that went through a lot of discussion and a lot of analysis as it was being developed under the state law and under the state constitutional amendment, which passed in 1990. Under that amendment, a body of local officials and community leaders worked together to draft that charter. It was not a charter that was produced by our agency. It was a charter produced by a charter committee consisting of community leaders and local officials. That was approved by the voters in 1992. The language which is proposed to be changed by Senate Bill 730 is identical to the language in our charter that was approved by the voters. In fact, the Legislative Assembly, following the voter adoption of our charter, then put these very same words into the state statute, which is proposed to be changed today. That statutory change was made with little or no dissent. I believe it passed unanimously through both houses with support from localities throughout our region. The charter's important not just because it's voter approved, but because of the checks and balances that it provides, as well as the guidance for our work in terms of defining the line between what's regional and what's local. There are several important checks and balances that guide us every day in what we're doing. The first, incidentally, is one we probably won't talk about a lot today, but is an expenditure cap. And I know that's a topic that somehow is getting some currency around this building, and if you want to talk about expenditure caps, I'd be happy to do that. But it also means our budget can't grow any faster than inflation, so even if we wanted to get into local affairs, it's not something that we have the resources to do. Very importantly, our charter also says that Metro's mission is limited to matters of metropolitan concern, and there are bars built into our charter to prevent us from straying into local matters, even if we wanted to and even if we had the money to do so. I think the chair will remember 2 years ago at this time, we were talking about a local function. At that time, we were talking about taxi cab regulation, something that currently the city of Portland dominates, and as we had through that dialogue, didn't want us getting into. Yet at the same time, in that particular instance, we had jurisdictions in the Tualatin Basin, city of Beaverton, Washington County, wanting to make that a matter of regional concern. So there's a process by which we make those sorts of decisions. I think most importantly, what the charter did was to create an advisory committee to us that consists of our partners in local government. And without their advice and their consent, there's very little of significance that we do. Now, that's partly because it's in the charter. It's also partly the political reality that for us to be doing things against the overwhelming advice of our constituency and local government would be politically suicidal. It's not something that happens. Are there disagreements? Absolutely. This is America. We have disagreements about things. We've had difficult debates about affordable housing or about stream protection or about industrial lands most recently. And there have been different cities on different sides of all of those issues. There have been different metro councillors on different sides of all of those issues. But until this afternoon, until 3 o'clock this afternoon, one thing that we did all agree on was that we would sort those things out regionally through the effective mechanisms that we have to consult with each other and settle those disagreements on policy around the table that we have regionally. Doesn't mean that we settle them in ways that everybody ends up being satisfied, but it does make progress on things. We are continuing to work through all of those different forums that we have on all of these different issues. But we have now, for the first time, one of those 25 cities not bringing it to that body or not being satisfied with the answer of that body or not being satisfied with the answer at the commission, at the LCDC commission, and not being satisfied with the answer at LUBA. And rather than continuing the dialogue to talk with us or their peer local jurisdictions, and I know you'll be hearing from them, and I know you have letters from jurisdictions who could not be here who are in opposition to this legislation, ranging from Troutdale to Damascus to Portland. And for those of you who are not from our region, ask sometime what Troutdale, Damascus, and Portland and Lake Oswego all have in common, and you'll find it's not necessarily a very long list, but one thing they do have in common is their opposition to this bill. Instead, we are here with state senators, 30 state senators, who should be caring about Enterprise and Brookings and Grants Pass and Lakeview and Monmouth, and we're somehow inviting you into a dispute that I think really can be settled regionally through the mechanisms that we have. Terms like overreaching and top-down, those terms have gotten bandied about. But I think in this instance, conduct of Metro Council, certainly those adjectives, we're not the ones that those terms apply to in this instance. So I appreciate your time. I'd be very happy to answer questions on the topics of industrial lands or the other areas that we're working on, and appreciate your time. Okay.
Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Atkinson?
Thank you very much. I just have you threw around a couple terms on. Thought I knew what I was talking. I thought I understood, but maybe I don't. Maybe you could help me. I'm just a simple country boy. It's the first time I've been to the big city.
And
I
credibility.
We're not in Metro. I guess I don't understand when you say checks and balances. I mean, I understand the legislative branch of government as being extremely weak in relationship to our check and balance with the judicial branch. We're excruciatingly weak when it comes to the check and balance we're supposed to have with the executive branch. And yet, and I understand the history of city and county government and the relationship that they have with their states and the relationship the state government has with the federal. So I thought I had a pretty good handle on that. But one thing in Oregon, you mentioned LCDC. I don't think that's a very good check and balance. One of the problems I face serving people in my district is when I get one answer out of the city, a different answer out of the county, and a completely different answer out of LCDC. So it's hard for me to understand how that's a check and balance system when the only people getting rich are lawyers, and nothing, decisions don't happen quickly. I think one of the testimonies that we've heard already today is the further you get away from local decision making, the longer, more painful a decision is. Help me understand how Metro, I see all these people out here paid well who are working for Metro, how is that a balance to volunteer in city government? I just don't understand how that's a balance.
Chair Ringo, Senator Atkinson.
Maybe that's a softball, or maybe I'm not intending it other than I don't understand how this is level.
Sure, I think it's the crux of the issue. I appreciate the question. And then I think we do I'm in terms of overpaid lawyers, I've tried to do my part by coming up here solo, and I'm not sure how many
people. You have some in the room?
We do have one in the room on some of the other bills that you're going to be hearing later. And I think
we
have one other employee here. I'm not sure how many. I don't think we have other people on the payroll in the audience, but we're working on that too. I think you do raise the question about, you know, where that line is, and then let me try to answer with some specifics. In terms of metropolitan concern and the Lubick.
Let me before you start, sure. Tell you that Randy Tucker's a friend of mine, so let me just put that on the record. All right, go ahead.
We like him too. Thank you. The issue in terms of dealing with particular local zoning ordinances, I think this issue has been raised specifically with regard to industrial land pertaining to an urban growth boundary decision. And the reason that people across the region are affected by this has been the result of a lot of what we've heard in the marketplace from people in business or people who want to be in business here, as well as local jurisdictions, including the city of Hillsborough, about the need for industrial parcels in our region. And that is something that affects the whole region, regardless of where it's located. And so providing, preserving those sorts of parcels is something that concerns employment prospects for everybody in the region, because they live and work in different places.
How's that a balance? When I read all this stuff, it looks like it's east versus west. It looks like one side of the metro district is getting growth and is happy, and the other side isn't. And you're asking us to intervene. Tell me how this is balanced.
Sure, Senator. Senator Atkinson, Chair Ringo, actually, I'm not asking you to intervene in this at all, and it would be my preference that these things be settled regionally, actually. In terms of the local zoning, even the LUBA decision, which is causing concern, which, again, is a case that we did not go ask to have rendered. It was another party that brought that. It was not something that we asked for. It's still limited to these issues of metropolitan concern. In terms of a local zoning applicant, we don't have a permit counter. It's not the kind of organization we are, nor is it the kind of organization we aspire to be in terms of issuing building permits, in terms of doing individual zoning. It's not what we do, nor is it something that anybody on our council wants to be able to do. If somebody wants to locate a business here, it's the same in our region as any other part of the state. They go to the local government that has the comprehensive planning authority for that region. The difference for that city, rather, that local city. And so the zoning is adopted by our city councils. The difference in our region is that those have to be consistent with regional policies that have been adopted by and large with the consent, not even by and large, but I think absolutely with the consent of that advisory committee of local government officials. I'll give you another example with relation to the map that the mayor mentioned with regard to designated regionally significant fish and wildlife habitat. That also is a map adopted as an inventory. It's not necessarily a regulatory tool. It identifies resources because doing so regionally made sense. But again, done with the advice and consent of that advisory committee, of which Hillsborough is a member, and if my memory serves, they voted in favor of that map at the time. And if there had been a lot of heartburn about it at that time, as there was, we worked things out. And I think that's what I'm trying to say here, is that we do try to work these things out, and we do not intrude into local concerns. Where this has been raised is around these issues of industrial land, because urban growth boundary movement is involved. And some of the conditions which we have imposed have been critical to justifying the inclusion of those parcels in the first place, and demonstrating to LCDC, whether you like them or not, having to demonstrate to them that land that we have a long case record that we have to justify, that we're bringing it in for industrial purposes, that it actually will be industrial purposes, so that we're not, and the city's not, subject then to an appeal that would be successful if a Walmart turns up there tomorrow. So that's part of it.
It's not a matter of like or dislike. It's a matter of how quick can you get things done. And I think that these decisions are one of the things that have someone's heel in the air hose of our economy. I mean, it's impossible to get things done in Oregon efficiently. And there's an old state representative that I'll finish up, because I know we got lots to talk about, and he used to say, and it just beamed into my mind, he used to say, I'm sure glad we don't get all the government we pay for. And, you know, I mean, here we've got three layers of government. Tell me how the process is any better. I appreciate where you come from, appreciate where the mayor's come from. I just, when you said checks and balance, it just didn't make a lot of sense to me. But
Senator, on the speed,
I
think,
it from a regional standpoint, from your point of view, so thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I think on the issue of urban growth, I think you will find, actually, when you talk about one of the following bills, that we agree with you, perhaps more than you might expect, and there will be some joint testimony on the urban growth boundary movement.
I don't know, but you already think you know who I am and what I think. I mean, you've put words in my mouth twice now.
I'm sorry about that,
sir. I mean,
sir.
I'm sorry to put my tie on, but I'm easy to work with.
Thank you,
minded to these types of things. Check with your man, Randy.
Any further questions, Senator Beyer?
Nope.
Okay, I just had a couple follow-ups. First of all, David, I'm a huge supporter of Metro. I think the idea of a regional organization makes just absolute common sense when you talk about planning together on transportation and growth and business and all the things that make a region come together, rather than cities competing and not working very well together. So I hope you don't look at hearing this bill as an attack on Metro, because it certainly isn't meant to be that. To me, it's a useful discussion on what is the balance of the authority. And I very much understand that your goal is to resolve those disputes collaboratively, and I think your track record is that you do that, and that there's every reason to think you will in the future. But to me, it is still useful to have a hearing to hear both sides. I've got a sign-up sheet where I've got a set of mayors who are going to testify in favor of the bill and a set of mayors who are going to testify against the bill, and so I just want to hear what people have to say. And so that's why I wanted to have the hearing, and I'm very, very interested in your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And so with that said, let's hear from a couple of city representatives who support the bill then. Richard Kidd and Ed Truax.
It won't come up. Sit down. We'll save time when we get into it.
That's the plan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Senators, thank you very much for the opportunity to come. My name is Richard Kidd. I'm the mayor of the city of Forest Grove, a volunteer job that I'm taking off today to get here to testify on two of these bills. I have four little comments that I want to make, and I will take my last comment and make it twice at the beginning and at the end. This legislation is necessary to maintain the distinction between local and regional responsibilities. Metropolitan districts have the authority to adopt functional plans, ordinances, and require local jurisdictions to comply with the framework plan, through their individual comp plan and implementing ordinances. The district does not have the authority to adopt zoning regulations in jurisdictions. Recent functional plan requirements made Metro concerning industrial development begin to blur the distinction between local comp plans, zoning authority, and the district's functional plan authority. This proposed bill clarifies the relationship between local jurisdictions, zoning authority, and the authority of the metropolitan districts. It does not change the basic relationship of local jurisdictions that the local jurisdictions have over their comp plan, but it does clearly prohibit a district to prescribe specific limitations in text in a comp plan or zoning ordinance. I listened very intensely with the testimony that was given by Tim and Tom. I agree with most of the things that they said and brought to you, but my concern is that this legislation is necessary to maintain the distinction between the local and regional responsibilities. I'm available for questions, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mayor Kidd. Why don't we go ahead, Mr. Truax, is it?
Yes.
What's your title here?
For the record, my name is Ed Truax. I'm the president of the Tualatin City Council.
I see. Okay.
Testifying today in the absence of our mayor, Lou Ogden. The City of Tualatin supports Senate Bill 730 to clarify the respective roles of Metro and the cities and counties within its boundaries with regard to zoning matters. Tualatin does not quarrel with Metro's authority to respond to matters of metropolitan concern, however those are defined, or with its authority to adopt a functional plan that establishes guidelines for regional planning at a macro level. Metro has a legitimate role here. What we're asking for is recognition that the affected cities do as well. We are concerned that Tualatin and other cities on the edge of the metropolitan urban growth boundary are losing their home rule authority to evaluate and plan for development of specific properties within our cities at the micro level. Tualatin has conscientiously planned its growth since the 1960s. We've developed a balanced community with almost equal amounts of commercial, industrial, and residential uses. We have complied with the statewide planning goals and with Metro's functional plan. However, because we are on the edge of the Metro UGB, it appears that Metro could require Tualatin and other affected cities on the edge of the UGB to impose specific zoning and specific parcel sizes on specific parcels of land because of perceived area-wide deficiencies, not deficiencies in our own planning, regardless of the impact that it has on us as a city. This is not good land use planning. At the city level of planning, our city staff can visit each site. They can note all the things that don't show up on a map, such as how cut-through traffic impacts local streets, where an odd drainage pattern occurs, or how close a specific parcel is to schools or churches or assisted living facilities. We have the ability to do a parcel-by-parcel evaluation and to determine what the impacts of a proposed use will be on adjacent existing neighborhoods or parcels. This is planning that the Metro staff simply cannot do because Metro staffing levels will never be high enough to allow visits to each site in the region. And making these types of planning decisions by looking at aerial maps is simply not sufficient to allow us to grow livable communities. Metro and the cities and counties each have a role to play in managing growth in our region. This is what Senate Bill 730 clarifies. It affirms Metro's role in planning at the regional level while ensuring that cities and counties retain the authority to zone local lands and assure that local concerns are not ignored. Thank you.
Questions? I just had a question. David Bragdon just testified that Metro doesn't have any desire to do local zoning. They don't have the capacity to do it. They don't have a permitting desk. They're not staffed to do that.
They have the ability to bring land adjacent to our city inside the urban growth boundary and specify the use for which it's to be developed. That, in my mind, is zoning.
And you would have them Would you give them the ability to bring land into the UGB, but without any guideline as to how it's to be used, and leave that decision to the city?
Well, to an extent. I mean, what we want to be able to do is to inject a level of realism at the community level into these expansion decisions. If you look at an aerial map of our region, there are areas on there that look like, from 10,000 feet, they would be suitable for example, a regional trucking distribution center. When in reality, the affected parcels of land are surrounded or contain, well, one specific parcel contains four churches and four schools, an assisted living facility. This is not land that's suitable for a regional distribution center to haul heavy trucks in and out of all day long. It lacks adequate transportation infrastructure. And what we want is we want the ability to comprehensively plan these areas within the broad context of what the regional requirements are, but retaining the authority to zone these lands, you know, where the buildings meet the ground, so that our communities can develop without destroying the livability that we've built over all these years.
Well, I appreciate that. I certainly think the goal is livability, but I want to go back. If we're talking about lands that are being brought into the UGB, that process is laborious. I mean, how much land you brought in and where and what its soil type is and exactly what is the need? Do we need residential? Do we need industrial? All that's done on the metro level, correct?
Well, you'd have to talk to someone who understands okay. more about that than I do, but one of the problems is that the soil type requirement ranks, in our minds, too high on the list of things to consider and are concerns.
We have another bill to deal with
and
that.
So for that one, too, I'm all for saving farmland and forest land, but I think we need to inject some realism into okay. this in terms of allowing the economy and the development community to work in concert with us to not impose unrealistic expectations on lands that are not economically viable to do what we bring them in for.
Okay. Thank you. Committee?
Thank you for taking the time off of work to come down here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Judy Hammerstedt and Charlotte Lee.
Good afternoon, Chair Ringo and members of the committee. I'm Judy Hammerstedt. I'm the mayor of Lake Oswego. And I'm here to testify in opposition to the bill. Now, it's not that we haven't had differences with Metro, and it's not that I haven't had some of the same concerns that people testifying before me have had, but it seems to me that the passage of state legislation to change the authority given to a jurisdiction by their voters under their home rule charter should really be avoided by the legislature. Metro has a home rule charter, the same as the cities have a home rule charter. They have different missions, and there are certainly processes in place where we can work together and work out our differences. As you've heard, Senate Bill 730 was brought about by a disagreement in the Portland region regarding some provisions of the recent decision to expand the region's urban growth boundary for industrial land. Well, when there was a need for industrial land, and the Metro Council approached this need, that's what they were going to be expanding the boundary for. They weren't going to be expanding it for commercial use or for anything else. So they were looking for specific pieces of land that would be large enough to be able to have commercial users on those pieces of land. So the urban growth boundary was moved, and if those pieces of land were then by local jurisdiction be able to be rezoned for commercial or even residential use, you still don't have enough industrial land to satisfy the need in the metropolitan area, and it has to go somewhere else. So it is a regional decision that is really managed by the Metro Council and by the Metro staff. It would be much more desirable in terms of future cooperative relationships in the Portland region to have this issue settled in the region and by the region. There's a process through the Metropolitan Policy Advisory Committee with the inclusions of the cities involved in the Metro Council to resolve the inevitable differences that arise among the jurisdictions in the area. And there are disagreements that inevitably arise because we all have our own personal interests. Moreover, Metro, the chair of the Metropolitan Policy Planning Advisory Committee, the Institute of Metropolitan Studies at Portland State, a small planning committee that includes myself, are working to establish a neutral forum for elected officials throughout the region for a discussion of the very issues of local authority and home rule that this bill addresses. Now, having been in the legislature, I know that when committees meet and you have people on opposite sides of an issue, that often the chair will say, you folks need to go and sort this out. You come back to us when you have some of these issues settled.
We might pass a bill one of you doesn't like.
We would love to be able to sort out these differences, and we frankly think that we can do that. Legislation isn't the solution to every problem, and I don't think it's going to solve this one. I really feel that we need to have the time and the ability to try to solve this on our own. If that's not possible, perhaps you would see us back here. But at this point, I think the region and the good thoughts in the region, the well-intentioned people who work in the region, the mayors, the Metro Council, MPAC, can manage to come up with a solution to these problems. If there's mission creep, we probably need to rein it in. We need to recognize it, and we need to solve the problem. But we don't need legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mayor Lehan?
Yes, Charlotte Lehan, mayor of Wilsonville. And I feel like a little bit like I'm caught in the middle here because as the city of Wilsonville has a foot in both counties, both Washington and Clackamas County, and and I am a volunteer mayor as well. Wilsonville has been one of the fastest growing cities for quite a while and has been in the forefront of land use debates and problems here from the get-go. We are committed to regional cooperation, and we are still fiercely protective of our own ability to plan for our own community. Like Hillsborough, we were very frustrated with the industrial lands expansion process because we felt like Metro was, as Tualatin testified, forcing us to take lands in areas that we didn't want. We worked through that process at the regional level and at the MPAC level and came up with a compromise and a solution that worked for us and didn't involve pushing development south of the Willamette River. We're still concerned about that, the proposal of pushing that Metro may use their authority to take land south of the Willamette where we don't want to go. And like Hillsborough, Wilsonville considered a legislative solution. We considered coming to this session of the legislature to try to find a solution to what is really a local and regional land use issue. We decided against that, and we oppose Senate Bill 730 because even though we feel like we could be the poster child for local control, we know that what we do with our urban growth boundary in the metro area, what happens to everybody's urban growth boundary affects everybody else's urban growth boundary. And that's what's at the bottom of this, is that when we don't protect our industrial lands for industrial uses, it means that somebody else has got to pick up the slack for those industrial lands somewhere else, or else you're going to push it out, further expansion onto productive farmland. That's how we get to this point of looking at what's going on in terms of the use inside. We do agree that it may be too open-ended at this point, that Metro could be benefited by having some clear limits, even though the limits have been, they haven't overreached in our opinion so far. But we're supportive of Hillsborough's idea that some sort of a fix may be needed in terms of establishing limits and principles for how Metro intervenes at the local level. But we believe that this remedy is too strong. It throws the baby out with the bathwater. And certainly, as Mayor Hammerstedt said, that the state legislature is not the arena to address it. This debate belongs with the 25 cities and 3 counties of the Metro region. And we need to be able to look at the obvious and the not-so-obvious implications for all the jurisdictions and get those fully vetted at the regional level rather than coming to a simplified approach at the state legislature. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time to be here. Any questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm almost wondering, we have so many mayors in the room, if we can talk about annexation, but Linda Ludwig doesn't want to do that right now, so she says no. That's Jim Bernard, and is it Dee Westcott?
Hi, I'm Jim Bernard. I'm the mayor of Milwaukee, and it's an honor to sit by the mayor of the newest city in the state of Oregon. I'm also a volunteer mayor. Actually, I'm a small business owner. I'd like to say I'm a mechanic and crawled out from underneath the car today to come here, but I didn't. I own a small business in downtown Milwaukee, and I actually sat at that table at Metro as an alternate during the discussions, and I did have some concerns about this issue. But I felt we had resolved this issue at that table and was actually concerned to see it go to LUBA and concerned to see it down here in a Senate bill. Actually, when I have a problem with an issue, I usually call Brian Newman, and we sit down at a table and we solve the problem before we have to come down to you. I'd actually like you to stay out of our business, but send us more money. So, it's sad to be down here today to talk from oppose this measure with my two friends, Hillsborough and Forest Grove. We've worked well together. I think this problem, we need to sit back down and talk about it and resolve this amongst ourselves. And coming to you guys to ask for assistance isn't the way I would have done it. I would have called Brian Newman and solved the problem over the phone. And we have had problems, and there are disagreements that the city of Milwaukee has. Very small community that is just packed with very little growth opportunity and a small budget, unlike Lake Oswego, for example. I'd be happy to talk to you about annexation with Happy Valley. But anyway, we're real excited. I oppose this measure because we need to sit down and resolve it amongst ourselves.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much, and I suspect that's what will eventually happen. Westcott.
Yeah, I'm Dee Westcott. I'm the mayor of the new city of Damascus, and like the mayor of Milwaukee, I own an automotive business in Damascus. I'm a volunteer. Among the other positions I hold about four elected positions from time to time. We're in the area, and I think Senator Atkinson said, why is one side of the area growing and the other side is not? We're on the area that got the growth. We were brought into the urban growth boundary with a acreage of 12,000 acres, of which we have to get in 1,600 acres of employment land. So we're struggling on the other side of it and struggling to just set up a new city. But in all of our discussions, and we've been at this now for 3 years, setting up the city, putting it to election and all that, Metro has been very cooperative, and they've bent over backwards to sit down with us and discuss problems. And we're in the middle of a concept planning now that's a two-year concept plan, again, with partnering with Metro and ODOT and Clackamas County. And there again, we're doing it through discussions in mutual agreement. The forbidden word annexation comes up tomorrow night. We start our first area-wide discussion on annexation processes. So that, again, we're trying to do with a cooperative agreements between the cities that are affected by this. And my feeling is through Metro's Policy Advisory Committee and the openness of Metro's counselors for us to approach them and solve these problems, that we can do it at a regional level and not have to come to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mayor Westcott, questions from the committee? Thanks, both of you, for taking your time to come out of your automotive shop.
Thanks.
Jonathan Schluter? I'm sorry, how is that last name pronounced?
Schluter.
Schluter, I'm sorry. Hi. And just to the audience, we have three other bills we want to get to today. I think this issue is framed pretty well, so if we can avoid duplication, that would be wonderful.
I'll try to be very brief then. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jonathan Schleter. I'm the Executive Director of Westside Economic Alliance, which is a regional business advocacy group based on the west side of the Portland metro region. We represent the employers, the business developers and property managers, and the communities flanked here in this room here today. Together, that represents about 41,000 employees operating on the west side of the Portland metro region. We work with our local officials. We work with the metro officials and their staff. We're very active in a number of the metro committees, and their staff counsels and advises our industry groups on the issues and development programs that we're trying to bring to the west side. So obviously, we have a very clear interest in this and involvement in the regionalism of our Portland metro region, and we have advocated for clear and consistent planning rules and zoning requirements and the clarity and consistency that businesses must have to be able to know what is expected of them today, tomorrow, and 20 years from now. That's why the Board of Directors of Westside Economic Alliance recently voted unanimously to support the passage of Senate Bill 730 for five basic reasons. Number one, the local control and local accountability. To us, we think it's pretty obvious that dealing with our local officials, our local city councils, and their planning staffs is much easier and more reliable and accountable when we're dealing with the people that are our neighbors and who know our businesses and the issues that we face. Senate Bill 730 is predicated on this belief and supports that view. Secondly, businesses cannot serve competing masters. There are numerous examples where regional and local regulations have conflicted with and contradicted each other to the detriment of our region and to our members and to our local economy. Earlier you heard Mayor Hughes reference Goal 5, where the city of Hillsborough had a approved Goal 5 program approved by the Land Conservation and Development Commission, only to have that program checked and thrown out to a regional view of the environmental restoration of our region. And the result has been that we have been talking and the billable hours have been piling up for 8 years on the issue of accountability of the environmental restoration of our region. This is a product of the frustration of examples like this. The business community is languishing and dealing with competing layers of an onion of regulation. That leads me to my third point. Economic development requires certainty. Businesses generally benefit from and support both regional planning and local planning in land use regulations. But businesses also need consistency and confidence in knowing the local planning and permit approvals granted under local plans and regulations won't be upended, overturned, revised, or rewritten by another layer of government. Senate Bill 730 attempts to define the line between regional and local land use authority and provides the certainty businesses need to locate here or expand their existing presence in our state and in the Portland metro region. Fourth, the status quo isn't working. We have opportunities to air our laundry or do our dirty laundry in the region. We would much prefer to do that. We would much rather deal with that at the impact table that you've heard references to and within our region. But for reasons that we've already explained and for in examples that have already been illustrated, that's not getting done. Fifth and finally, this is a starting point. It's not the end line. Westside Economic Alliance appreciates the committee's attention to Senate Bill 730 because, as you've seen, the dialogue is now resuming, and I think that's going to be productive. I think that's going to be very helpful to bring this to your attention and make us air these differences and take care of these problems within our region. We offer our support and encouragement to this committee, to the witnesses that have already testified and that will continue to testify on this issue as you press it forward. And thank you very much for the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much. Bob Bailey? Elon Hassan?
Thank you very much, Senator Ringo. For the record, I'm Bob Bailey. I'm City Commission President for City of Oregon City. Sometimes that gets to be in the Department of Redundancy Department when I say City of Oregon City so many times. I'll be real brief. We believe that this issue does not rise to a charter-level issue that requires a legislative fix. We're talking about some concerns, certainly over application of some regulatory and procedural issues in the metro area, but like many of the other speakers here opposing Senate Bill 730, we'd like to work this out in within the region. We have a long track record of being able to do that. We have a lot of confidence in our ability to hold our own with Brian Newman and David Bragdon and the others on the council, and we believe that working cooperatively within the region is the way to go. So we are opposed to this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Ringo, members of the committee. My name is Elon Hassan, the legislative director for 1,000 Friends. I will also be brief. We oppose this bill, and 1,000 Friends has both supported and opposed Metro on numerous issues over the years, but oppose this bill because we think Metro is a critical institution for the region, and this bill simply takes away its power to do that. And this issue... It's one that arose locally, and we feel like it should be dealt with locally at the regional level, not the statewide level.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Dennis Mulvihill, last witness on this bill. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on this bill? I should ask. Okay.
Hi, good afternoon. Dennis Mulvihill, Washington County. Washington County likes the bill, but we don't like how it's written.
Well, that's a new twist on this.
I think it's obvious that there's a lot of distance between the parties, but that I would observe that it usually means that there's a lot of room to find common ground. Washington County would like an opportunity to be a part of a work group to see if we need or don't need legislation to fix this. It's unclear to us which is really needed at this point in time.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay. I'm certainly not going to move the bill today. I don't know if it will move at all this session. It sounds like everybody agrees that you can work this out among you. At least that's the goal. And so we're just going to go ahead and close the public hearing, and I'd be interested in hearing what progress occurs on this issue over the next month or a couple months. But I really appreciate the testimony of all the elected officials who came down and were part of this discussion. Thanks again. And so we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 730. And let's see here. Let's go ahead and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 431. What bill? Did you want to testify on another bill? Okay. What's that?
We have other testimony on other bills
as well. Oh, I'm sorry. All right, let's tell you what here. Let's go do that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, we'll just recess then Senate Bill 431. We'll go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 900. And Susan McClain, why don't you come on up then? And could you run and get Bruce Starr? Senator Starr, that'd be fine. But come on up, Susan. Mr. Kidd?
Yeah.
Sure, why don't you come up as well?
And then Bruce could open him.
Oh.
I can't do anything without him.
The mayor has asked me to go ahead. He's going to wait for Mr. Starr. I think Mr. Starr and the mayor are going to have some remarks that they're going to work on together.
Okay.
And I want to thank you for allowing us to come and testify and also for putting this next on your docket. I am Susan McClain, and I am actually a Metro Councilor from the west side of Washington County. I live in Forest Grove. I go to church in Cornelius, and my husband has his business in Cornelius and has since 1991. And I also teach part part-time in Hillsborough. And the only reason I mention all of that is for a couple reasons, and Mr. Senator Atkinson is not here, but maybe you'd pass it on to him. I started as a Metro Counselor, as a volunteer, and then Tim Circum and the rest of the folks on the Charter Committee made it a paying job. And I had to take a cut in pay, and I now only teach one or two classes at Glencoe High School. But because I love to teach, I still teach part-time. But I did have to take a cut in pay, which I have for 15 years being a Metro Counselor. But it is a paid job now, part-time. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 900. And I want to say that we really respect and support the idea that the mayor is bringing to you today, which is an issue of subregional comments and subregional need. And I'd like you to know that the Metro Council have asked that LCDC adopt a rule at Metro's request to actually look at subregional analysis in our UGB expansions. And so we are feeling very comfortable with what the mayor is discussing today, because we do recognize that there are some subregional conversations that we need to have in the region to make sure that not just the regional economics and the regional urban growth boundary is being taken care of, but also subregional areas. I would point out, though, that there is a lot of discussion about what are the appropriate subregions. And as I've already pointed out with my personal experience of living in Forest Grove, going to church in Cornelius, and working in Hillsborough, there are some communities that are more entwined than others. And for example, in Cornelius, half of the children go to the Forest Grove schools, the other half of the children go to the Hillsborough schools, and I teach many of the Cornelius children in my Hillsborough schoolroom. We are very interested in making sure that the smaller communities are having equity. We've talked about revenue sharing, and have actually had some revenue sharing legislation down in front of you last year at the behest of Councillor Hostica. Metro has a policy of what we would call regional equity with jobs and housing balance throughout the region, and that's part of the reason that land was added in the area of Forest Grove and Cornelius, both in the year 2002 and in the year 2004. We had a trade that was brought in Forest Grove at the request of the city, and we also supported bringing land in Cornelius, even though there was opposition because it was EFU land in the Cornelius area. We are very hopeful that you will pass Senate Bill 245 today, we're hoping that with the ability of not having to go back to another urban growth boundary decision till 2009, we will have an opportunity to discuss some of these subregional issues that the mayor is interested in us looking at. And we hope that will give us an opportunity to do that in an appropriate way to take care of some of the issues that Forest Grove or Cornelius may have.
So you're also giving a pitch for Senate Bill 245?
I am.
Okay.
And I will make this, I'll make this very short, and that is that we believe that the issues that are raised in Senate Bill 900 would best be discussed in the context of a larger look, and we know both the state and Metro are interested in that big look at the rules and regulations that govern our urban growth boundary expansions and our review and analysis. So today I have to say that the Metro Council has asked me to speak because we're not in favor of this particular Senate Bill 900, but we certainly are interested in the issues that the mayor brings up on subregional analysis.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Starr, why don't you go next?
No, I haven't. I'm waiting for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, State Senator Bruce Starr, Senate District 15, representing Western Washington County communities of Hillsborough, North Plains, Forest Grove, and Cornelius. I had Senate Bill 900 drafted really after a meeting that we had out in Cornelius and Forest Grove with the leadership, elected leadership, city councils, and staffs of those two communities, and their frustration with the land use process that they're faced with in the metro area. I provided a map. Hopefully each of you have a copy of that, and it shows the urban growth boundary that surrounds Cornelius and Forest Grove as a small island on the far, what would be the left-hand side of that map. Mayor Kidd's holding up the map now with it outlined to so you can identify the territory we're referencing. I appreciate the Metro Council's willingness to look at sub-regional analysis as it relates to the expansion of the urban growth boundary in the metro area. My understanding is that they have a minimum population, and Councilor McLean can correct me, but I believe that the minimum population in that sub-region would be 50,000. The two communities of Cornelius and Forest Grove as an island in this metro boundary fall far short of that 50,000 population. And I think that it is appropriate for the Metro Council to identify the issues that they relate to Cornelius and Forest Grove separately from the rest of the Metro Council. I think it's appropriate for the Metro Council in their deliberations, as they have to by statute, periodically review urban growth boundaries and those issues that pertain to urban growth boundary issues. I think it's appropriate for the Metro Council to look at that and look at Cornelius and Forest Grove separately from the rest of the metro boundary. They are an island. They are separated. And I think that it just makes sense when you're looking at the need for industrial land, when you're looking at the need for housing, when you're looking at the jobs-housing balance, when you look at the transportation issues that are required for the Metro Council to look at. I think that's appropriate for the Metro Council to treat Forest Grove and Cornelius separately. Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this bill. Appreciate the public hearing. I'm not surprised by the Metro Council's testimony, to Councilor McCain's testimony today. I didn't expect necessarily that Metro would, jump up and down and say this is a great idea and send us on our merry way, and we went off, we would go. I would, however, be willing, if there's interest at the committee, to work on this issue, to try to work with maybe Mr. Tucker, who represents Metro in this building, on a compromise, if that's something that's achievable. I don't know if there's support of the bill as it is. That would be great. I think it's an important issue. It's one that has a significant impact and effect on the constituents that I represent in Washington County. I think with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over the testimony to Mayor Kidd, who can talk probably with greater understanding of the process and the impacts on his community than I certainly can. I appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Mayor Kidd?
Thank you, Senator Ringo, and members of the board. Again, for the record, my name is Richard Kidd, Mayor of the City of Forest Grove. First of all, just a few general comments to follow up. The City of Forest Grove, is in its entire history, has had no urban growth expansions, but has had one urban growth trade where we traded 65 acres of property out and 65 acres of property in over a 30-year period of time. That's kind of unique, and when we are required to have a 20-year land supply, we have run out. We have attempted that on several occasions. Some of the urban growth expansion criteria requires that you justify a need, and then that need be distributed over the entire urban growth boundary. In our case, our major employer in the City of Forest Grove is Merrick's Corporation, which was unable to expand and chose to move their expansion to the east side, and they further expanded to the area that is 42 miles away from Forest Grove. They have one of their buildings up for sale at this time, and they also have part of their property up for sale in Forest Grove because they do not have enough to accommodate their expansion. The urban growth boundary in that expansion was not the only reason. Transportation and availability of workforce was also cited in that, so it's not the only reason in there. I'd like to, first of all, give you some statistics about our community. Forest Grove has the lowest per capita income in the metropolitan region, $16,992. Forest Grove has the third lowest median family income of $47,733 in the Portland area. The second and third highest percentages of families below the poverty level for 10.4%. the second and third highest percentage of individuals living below the poverty level, and that's 14.4% in the metropolitan area. The fourth lowest per capita real market value in the metropolitan area of $53,480. But unlike other areas separated from metro region, physical separation from the rest of the region is by a piece of land between the city of Cornelius and the city of Hillsborough, making us an island. We're a relatively small population, between 30 and 32,000 combined in the two things, compared to the rest of the region. We're furthest away from the metro region center, and we're close to the coast range. We do not have a major transportation route. We have limited mass transit with one bus service. Market conditions differ here from the other parts of the Portland area, and we're isolated primarily because of transportation facilities. Historic Forest Grove was established by Pacific University, and historically we have been an agricultural and forest activities in the community. While other parts of the region have enjoyed an economic renaissance, Forest Grove has lost 16% of its workforce between the year 2001 and 2004. The above situation indicates that the approach used by Metro in other parts of the region are difficult in Forest Grove and Cornelius. Soil priorities, that's ORS 197-298, make it difficult to seek urban growth expansion in our area. When we justify an expansion in our area, that justification is transferred 42 miles away to an area of Damascus, our newest city. Region and function plans for industrial requirements by Metro may create the lack of flexibility for Forest Grove's need to encourage job growth, while Metro's approach may be more appropriate closer to transportation zones. It does not work this time in Forest Grove. And I mentioned Merrick's Corporation, the city's lowest employer, which has made their expansion in Wood Village instead of in Forest Grove. The density of land efficiency that is required by the framework plan in our area creates difficulties to achieve in Forest Grove and in Cornelius. More auto-dependent than other areas in the region. Our real estate value is the lowest in the region. Structural parking is not feasible in the downtown because not all rail transit routes, because we do not have a rail transit route, we're not eligible for real estate assistance from Metro programs. Senate Bill 900, paragraph 3B, would allow Metro to consider Forest Grove and Cornelius separately from the main body of the region to allow a different functional plan approach and UGB consideration. The city of Forest Grove and Cornelius have lost seven businesses in the last year and a half that have moved to other portions of the region. Of the seven, two went out of business and one moved out of state. I would respectfully request that you do consider this bill very strongly, and like four of the other mayors that have testified here today, I am also at the impact table. I have the opportunity to discuss this. I've been at the impact table for over 13 years. I probably have more time there than anybody else at the table, but I did have a break, so I'm not the senior person. Rob Drake is that individual. But we started out together, and it was called RPAC originally, and I worked on land use in the state since 1973. I'm familiar with Senate Bill 100. I think it is great. I have an opportunity to travel to Washington, D.C., Florida, Texas, and Alaska, and every time I go, I have the opportunity to praise Metro because it is a model that nobody else understands. Sometimes I think we have a difficulty in doing it, and I think it's a great model. I'm in hopes that you will favorably consider Senate Bill 900, even though at this time Metro does have a letter authorizing them to
provide five subregions within the metropolitan region with no subregion smaller than 50,000. That would split us again and not do it, but they do have that authority now. And what I'm really asking for is a sixth subregion, which would be City of Forest Grove and Cornelius, because we don't meet the trigger point of 50,000. We are an island, and we should be considered separate because, in fact, we are a subregion within the metropolitan region, as the map clearly indicates to you. We're the only island that they have. Thank you very much, sir, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you very much. I guess, well, Senator Byer, go ahead.
I guess a process question. Is it possible for you to withdraw and pull out of Metro and not be part of it anymore?
We could try that approach, but believe it or not, I will tell you that the elected officials in Forest Grove and Cornelius, most of them, I can't speak for all of them because I don't have time, opportunity to talk with all of them, but most of them think that Metro is a good organization. They do a lot of things for us. I promised I wouldn't use this term, but I've got to. We do feel like we're the stepchild. With the activity going on all the time on the east side or concentrated in the center of the west side, and with the activity being very high, the little community out there in Forest Grove and Cornelius just does not get the attention, that, of course, that we feel we'd like to have. And
Councilor McClain.
Well, there was one other item I wanted to bring up, and that is the fact, as I've already indicated, we, you know, the Metro Council, and I personally as a Metro Council who lives in Forest Grove right on the city line for the last 15 years, basically want to make sure that the legislation that you would pass would stand the test of time. And there are some other issues. There is the issue of the conversation we're going to have on what is subregional, what are the other subregions. But the other item is the fact that we have some Washington County residential areas that are on septic tanks, four rows of them, four streets of them, that are in between Cornelius and Hillsborough. We also have the City of Hillsborough School District, who has bought a property right on the Cornelius line, right next to the City of Cornelius line. We also, and they're planning to build their next high school there. They also, we have a situation where the only separation might end up being a creek and a short, small floodplain. And so, you know, the idea that this bill is talking about it being separated an island, it, that may not always be, or even soon not be, the case. And so that was one of the issues we wanted to make sure you knew. And finally, like I said, we want to talk about subregional too. We think that if it's going to be a regional dialogue, that we wouldn't set one subregion before we talked about what the other four or five would be.
Do you, I appreciate that. Councilor McClain, do you think that something does need to be done with that Forest Grove Cornelius Island because it its needs aren't met?
Well, the only other thing I need to tell you is that when we asked for separation between Forest Grove and Cornelius, because when we were having dialogue about the future vision, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, two different communities said they wanted to be separated from the rest of the region. One of them was Tualatin and Wilsonville, which that has kind of grown together, mm-hmm. and the other one was Forest Grove and Cornelius. So we did not bring in some exception land between Cornelius and Hillsborough and that go around, and the state told us we had to look at that exception land because it was not in the state criteria to keep separations between communities. Okay. So I think that's another issue that's right in the middle that makes it kind of muddy, and I think we need to deal with that also in this bigger look at the state level as well as the regional level.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. You know, I had a bill last session to basically force Metro to go to subregional as well.
I voted for it.
And I appreciate that. But the reality, and the bill ultimately didn't go all the way through because, you know, Metro came and said, we're going to do it ourselves. You don't have to tell us to do it, and that's all fine and dandy. My question is when? When is this going to happen? We've heard about this conversation that has to happen on subregional. And my goodness, we want to do subregional. We believe in subregional. It's important that we do subregional. All we're saying is, let's do it then.
Can I answer that?
Yes, go ahead.
That's a great comment, and I think Richard and I and Bruce all agree that it needs to be done. We finally got the state to agree that we should look at it. But it's an issue where we were being forced to go back and look at the industrial, and we haven't had time to do it. So another hit for 245 if you can give us to 2009, we'll have the time to actually do that work. And, you know, even though that's not tomorrow, it's the fact is that this work is pretty difficult, and it's pretty time-consuming, and it's pretty expensive. And so what we're saying is when we got that passed, they said immediately, you've got to get back to us. We're going to only give you a one-year extension to get this work done. And so the situation was they wanted industrial land, and they wanted it now. And so we didn't have time to talk about the overall sub-regional issue.
I understand that you're pitching Senate Bill 245. Is there some form of Senate Bill 900 that you would approve of?
Well, what I've seen today, I said, I think has flaws because I think it may be short-lived in its description. And I think, again, that Bruce had a good comment to talk, you know, let's talk to Randy and let's talk to Richard and Bruce and others and see what we can do.
Randy, are you amenable?
Of course.
Mayor Kidd, you get the last word. Unless you have questions, Senator Byer?
No, I guess my comment would be, if it's possible for you to pull out of Metro and your option is wait till 2009 to get it fixed in Metro, you're going to die by then.
I can't wait till 2009. Well, that's why I'm opposed to 245.
Well, take your option and get out of Metro.
Mayor Kidd, last word.
I'm going to jump from 900 to 245 and tell you that if we have to wait 9 years to, we've been programming expansion in 2005 and 2006 and 2007. And if we have to wait, we'll die on the vine.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate all of your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Let's go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 431, and as long as we're talking about it, let's open up the Senate Bill hearing on Senate Bill 245.
That was
Henry,
you're just doing that.
Open up a hearing on Senate Bill 245.
Right. You close 431.
We haven't actually opened the hearing yet.
I think we did. I meant to close Senate Bill 900.
Okay.
What did I say?
431.
All right. We're closing Senate Bill 900. Randy, Michael Jordan.
Mr. Chair, is it okay to go ahead and invite Mr. Chandler up at the same time?
You want to? Yes.
Yeah.
a quick question, though, on the bill we just handled, Randy. What do you suggest we do? I mean, can you coordinate with Senator Starr and Mayor Kidd and come up with something?
Mr. Chair, Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro. I'll certainly have to talk to the Metro Council to see what direction I get, certainly, you know, we're always willing to have a conversation with people and try to specify what the issues are that we want to try to resolve.
Okay. Well, it seems to me they have a problem we need to solve, and I don't know that we want to wait till 2009, but let's go ahead and talk about this bill. Go ahead.
Well, actually, Mr. Chair, if I may, just... And I have enough people in the room that can correct me if I'm wrong, but 2009 is when the next large-scale, and this will lead into Senate Bill 245, the next large-scale analysis of the UGB would take place. There, depending on the purposes, there may be other ways that, you know, UGB expansions take place, but certainly in 2009, that's 2007 right now is when the next UGB expansion is scheduled, and that's what gave rise to Senate Bill 245. So let me just start on Senate Bill 245.
Go ahead.
As you may or may not know, Metro is the only jurisdiction in the state of Oregon that is required by law to evaluate the residential capacity of its urban growth boundary every 5 years. And we did that in 2002. The council expanded the urban growth boundary in 2002 more than it's ever been expanded in the history of the state, or more than any urban growth boundary has ever been expanded in the history of the state, largely for residential purposes, but had to come back again this year, as you've already heard discussed earlier today, to do some unfinished business with respect to that same UGB expansion, having to do with providing adequate land for industrial use. So it's been all UGB expansions all the time at Metro for the last couple of years. And as Councilor McLean mentioned, it's a very time-consuming and very expensive process that is required in order to make sure that these UGB expansions are done correctly, that they comply with the law, that they satisfy the needs of the region, and that they can withhold legal scrutiny. And the result is that we tend to finish one urban growth boundary expansion just in time to start the next one. And so it's what we call the UGB treadmill or the UGB squirrel cage or whatever metaphor you'd like to use. Now, that is the impetus behind Senate Bill 245, which, as drafted and as you have it before you, is very straightforward and simply extends that cycle from a 5-year cycle to a 10-year cycle. However, we've been having very productive conversations with the development community in the region. And let me just list some of the groups that have been involved in this. The Metro Home Builders, the Portland Metropolitan Association of Realtors, Associated General Contractors, Columbia Corridor Association, and the Westside Economic Alliance, among others. Those are the main ones that I think we've been talking to. And we're nearing what I would consider an agreement to both pull back and expand this bill. Pulling back in the sense of not requesting a 10-year cycle, but instead requesting a 2-year extension of the current cycle. I mean, certainly the Metro Council would prefer to have a 7-year cycle rather than just a 2-year extension of this cycle, but we'll be able to work with the our regional interests that I've mentioned on that.
So a 2-year extension of the current cycle takes it to
2009, right. Currently, we would be required to complete a full evaluation of the residential capacity of the UGB by December 31st of 2007, having just 6 months ago finished the industrial land expansion.
So your expectation is to come at us with some amendments?
That's correct. And let me just mention a couple other elements of that. The way we're being able to come to, I think, agreement with the development community in the region, who has generally wanted us, in fact, I think, John, correct me if I'm wrong, was behind the 5-year cycle to begin with, or supported the 5-year cycle to begin with, is that we've found in the subsequent years that expanding the line, moving the line, doesn't make development happen. There's a lot more that needs to happen, and we've got a lot of land right now in the urban growth boundary that we've brought in fairly recently. But we have other barriers besides having it in the urban growth boundary to keep it from getting developed. Damascus, Bethany, et cetera. You have to do the concept planning. You have to find funding for infrastructure, et cetera. And so we're working on a concept that blends some of those different elements together in a way that that helps us address the current need, which is to get land in the boundary right now, get the development underway there.
Okay. Thank you.
Gordon, John.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. As Mr. Tucker indicated, we've been in productive conversations with Metro. We expect to be able to come back with amendments. Just to be clear, though, the 5-year cycle was our bill back in 95 or 97. As written, we would oppose the bill, but that's why we're talking, to see if we can't fix the real problem, which is, Randy's right, we did expand the boundary in Metro larger than it's ever been, and precious little has been developed. The line is one part, the infrastructure, the planning, all the other pieces are another part. It's our belief that we can work with Metro to come up with an amendment to this bill that will make it actually address the real issues.
Well, I will wait for one of you to tell my committee staff that we're ready to go with amendments.
Okay. We're getting fairly close, Mr. Chair.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
So let's close the hearing on Senate Bill 245, and then let's have the hearing on Senate Bill 431, which we started to have. Dick Benner, Bob Rendy, please. Sorry to keep you waiting so long. I thought we were going to pop into this bill quickly.
It's been a pleasure, Senator.
We'll do it tomorrow morning. We'll roll it over and do it tomorrow morning. Unless they wait out the door. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Richard Benner for Metro. The last time we were before you on this bill, you may recall that the department had concerns with the way it was drafted, and the concern was that if all matters that arose in periodic review came to LCDC, rather than getting split and sometimes going two places, one to LCDC and one to LUBA, that a result would be higher costs for LCDC, and that some of those costs would be associated with issues over which LCDC had no special expertise and that might be better at LUBA. At that point, you asked us if we could talk with one another a little more and see if we could come up with a way to move this forward but address the concerns. You may also remember that after the last time you looked at this bill, there was to be the final meeting of the Interim Committee on Periodic Review, on which I serve. And one of the recommendations potentially coming out of that committee was the passage of this bill. We had that meeting, and in the course of the meeting, we discussed LCDC's concerns, and the result was a consensus on a compromise, which is embodied in the Dash 1 amendments. And let me see if I can explain it very quickly. The way it would work is if a city or a county or metro is in periodic review, meaning that its product is going to get submitted to the agency, because that's where periodic review decisions go, then everybody who participates in that process at Metro or the city or the county would take his or her concerns with the local decision, take them to LCDC. There would be no immediate appeal to LUBA, which is what happens today. You end up going both places. Once everything went to LCDC, the director of the department would look at the complaints that people have, the objections that they might have to what the local government did, and if the director of the agency feels that it would be more appropriate to have LUBA look at the issue rather than LCDC, then the matter would be transferred to LUBA. Let me give you an example. Most of the matters in periodic review fall very nicely within the competence and expertise of LCDC, but every once in a while an issue is raised that does not. An example would be some of what you heard in the last couple of hearings. One of the local governments that did not like part of what Metro did in its last periodic review decision on industrial lands, the city of Hillsborough, had an argument that what Metro did violated the city's home rule charter. That's an issue over which LCDC doesn't have any special expertise. And LCDC would have spun its wheels on it, gotten some advice from its attorney general on it, and gotten a bill for that. So under this bill, as it's drafted with the Dash 1 amendments, if all these matters went to LCDC and LCDC saw that concern by the city of Hillsborough about its home rule charter, the director of the department could say, there's an issue over which LCDC has no special expertise, that ought to go to LUBA. And that's what these amendments would allow. So I'm not going to put words in Mr. Rindy's mouth, but it's my understanding that the new consensus that came out of the Interim Periodic Review Committee that's reflected in these amendments satisfies the department.
Okay.
Thank I'd be happy much. To answer any questions.
Okay. Mr. Rindy.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Bob Rindy, Legislative Coordinator for the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I concur with everything Dick has said. I won't take any more of your time. We are in support of the amendments, okay, and they do resolve the concerns that we raised to you last time. We are in support of the bill.
Thank you very much. Senator Shields, we just had a discussion. This is a cleanup that they've come to agreement on. Senator Beyer, are you comfortable with this?
Sure.
Okay. Before we go out of public hearing, I'd just like to ask one thing. You've provided a one-page description of what the dated March 24th, 2005. Could one of you provide another one-pager with just a little bit more substance? I mean, this one-pager pretty much says, "Well, we reached an agreement," and we've. But I mean, Dick, you said a lot of things that aren't in here, and I wasn't taking notes as fast as you were talking. And I, just in order to advance this to the floor, I just appreciate a little bit more substance describing the issues that you raised. Is that okay?
Certainly. When would you need that?
Well, by Monday or Tuesday.
Yesterday.
Yesterday. Yeah, I'm happy to go ahead and pass the bill out today, but I'd like that
just to have in the bill file as we bring it to the floor.
Okay.
Okay, that'd be great. So let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 431, open up a work session on Senate Bill 431. Chair moves the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 431. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair moves Senate Bill 431 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And so we'll adjourn this committee. See everybody at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Thank you.